Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. If the teachings and audios you find here at BethEmmanuel.org are a blessing to you, please consider supporting Beth Emmanuel with a gift, or become a member of our virtual congregation by becoming a regular contributor. To learn how to contribute, click on the Donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
So we'll learn a little bit about the Ten Commandments today. This is Ten Commandments Sabbath, what with it being Parshat Yitro, the giving of the Torah at Mount Sinai. It's pretty exciting. Most people in Western society know about the Ten Commandments, right? It's kind of a given for the Ten Commandments. Even if, I mean, I suppose we could do a Jay Leno type of thing, like man on the street, you go up and say, can you list the Ten Commandments, you know? We might get some funny results. I think what most people could probably, like, knock off three or four of them, you know, maybe three or four or five. Three or four or five of the commandments, anyway, you know. So it's part of the popular culture, the idea of the Ten Commandments. God spoke them at Mount Sinai. He carved them into two stone tablets. Moses wrote them into the Holy Scroll of the Torah. And more recently, Hollywood and Cecil B. DeMille made them into a major motion picture starring Charlton Heston, right? Recently, the Ten Commandments adorned the walls of U.S. courthouses as well. Then in 2005, there was a split decision of the Supreme Court that ruled that the Ten Commandments cannot be displayed on government property, in public places and government property. Why? Well, there's a very good reason behind this. They represent the Judeo-Christian faith. The Ten Commandments uniquely encapsulate and symbolize the whole Bible, really. It's like the foundational idea of the Bible, and so therefore Judaism and Christianity. And the U.S. government attempts to separate itself from endorsing any one particular religion, or two particular religions in this case. And so that was the reasoning behind the justices who made that decision. But like I said, it was a split decision. It was not a unanimous decision. It was a very contentious issue, and it continues to be. And every year you're going to hear about this coming up again as somebody challenges this over and over. Anyway, I think it's interesting because it's a problem, even in American popular society, this question over the Ten Commandments. And the reason is that the Ten Commandments summarize God's Torah. They summarize the law. I like to think of the Ten Commandments as David Letterman's top 10 list, the top 10 of God's 613 commandments. You know, it's like, and you know, you run through just the top 10, and that's why we got Ten Commandments. And most Christians, by the way, if we were to do the man on the street thing, and we say, are you a Christian? Yes. Do you think that we should keep the Ten Commandments? Well, yeah. You know, most Christians are going to say, yes, we should keep the Ten Commandments. Even Christians who believe that Christ came to abolish the law agree that the Ten Commandments somehow didn't get abolished in that process. Most believe that Christians need to keep the Ten Commandments, but at the same time, you have a couple who disagree with the premise, especially when it comes to the fourth commandment, remember the Sabbath day, keep it holy. For example, Martin Luther, you remember Martin Luther, he believed that Christians absolutely should not keep the commandment of the Sabbath. He felt very strongly about this. He felt strongly that it was, in fact, it was wrong for Christians to observe the commandment of the Sabbath. And not just in terms of Saturday, but also in terms of Sunday or any day of the week. He released a book called Against the Sabbatarians, in which he wrote that Christians should not keep the Sabbath, neither on Saturday as the Jews do, nor on Sunday as the Christians do, or any day of the week, because he felt that this was abolished by Christ. It was something that was given to the Jews as a sign of their to keep the Sabbath then was to do, you know, Christ a disservice because he had gone to all that trouble of abolishing that for us. Anyway, other Christians believing in the Ten Commandments do believe in keeping the Sabbath on Sunday, the first of the week, which is sometimes called the Christian Sabbath. I don't know if you've ever heard that, but sometimes Sunday is called the Christian Sabbath. And some Christians believe that we believe in keeping the fourth commandment, the the commandment of the Sabbath. But it doesn't necessarily have to be on Sunday. It could be on any day of the week, as long as it's one day out of seven. That's a popular interpretation as well, that you should give, you know, should set aside one day as a Sabbath. Anyway, as you know, it wasn't always like this. Long ago, you know, in the days of the apostles and so on, there was no questions like this. You know, everybody knew what day the Sabbath was, and there wasn't any, like, there wasn't a Christian Sabbath in the days of Yeshua and the apostles, and there wasn't any question about, well, you think this might have been abolished, you know, because, you know, there wasn't, that hadn't occurred to anyone yet. Or if it had occurred to anyone, the only person it had occurred to was Jesus, and he said, no, don't think that. So that wasn't even an issue. And we know that our master was a Sabbath keeper and was going to the synagogue every Sabbath, and he was so concerned about the proper way to keep the Sabbath that most of his arguments, I would say the majority of his arguments with religious leadership of his day, pertain to the Sabbath. He even told his disciples to pray that they should not have to flee from persecutors on the Sabbath, to pray in advance, that they shouldn't have to make their flight on the Sabbath. And of course, his apostles kept the Sabbath, and even the apostle Paul, who doesn't have such a great reputation as a stalwart Torah keeper in most interpretations of Paul. But if you read Paul, and I'm reading him very carefully right now, his adventures in the book of Acts, I'm reading Paul very carefully, and he's really he's in the synagogue on the Sabbath all the time, over and over and over again. We read about Paul on the Sabbath, so he is a Sabbath keeper too. And that's sort of what we do here. That's kind of our gig. That's like, oh, Beth Emmanuel, Sabbath fellowship. That's like our niche. You know, when you're doing marketing, you want to occupy a niche. If you can occupy a unique niche, it's like, yeah, this is our product here. That's our product. You know, we could try to sell Judaism, but that's not, nobody's looking for Judaism. You know, but the Sabbath, you know, that's, I'm thinking Sabbath is our product. That's like, we used to have those buttons. Remember those buttons? Tammy made those buttons. It said, got Sabbath. All right, that's a little corny, but I mean, that's the idea. That's the idea. I remember Jim Westman would say, I was made for the Sabbath. You know, it's like the opposite of what the master said. Man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. But anyway, I'm suggesting to you, Beth Emmanuel, that, you know, we are Beth Emmanuel Sabbath Fellowship, and we should be capitalizing on that as our asset. That is what we have to offer to the world. Something, it's a product that maybe not everybody even realizes they need. You know, maybe they don't really, but everybody needs the Sabbath, yes? It's been there since the creation, really, the first thing. It's pretty much the first thing. And today most Christians, if they're aware of the Sabbath, the concept of Sabbath, if they're aware of it at all, they don't know which day it is. And if they do know, they're not often very clear on their reason for not observing the Sabbath. In Messianic Judaism, you know, the Sabbath is important to us, right? But there seems to be some confusion even among our ranks about the Sabbath and how to keep it, who should keep it, and so on. And I think we have some clarity on that. I think we've been able to, we've spent 10 years going through the ringer, the Sabbath ringer, so to speak, to come to terms with this. And I feel like we have something, you know, something that we can actually say substantively and say, okay, we tried that, we did that. You know, it's like, here's how it works out. And this is so fundamental to our existence. It's like I keep saying, it's right in the name. We are Sabbatarians. You know, that's something, if you want to call yourself something, that's something you can call yourself. We keep the seventh day. And I'd like to talk about the Sabbath today, this fourth commandment, one of the Ten Commandments. And not to tell you something new, something that you don't know already, something you haven't heard me say before, But I think it's necessary to revisit this topic of Shabbat once in a while. Once every couple years, maybe. I don't know. Every so often, we need to come back to this because this is home territory. It's why we exist and call ourselves a Sabbath fellowship. Now, like I said, we've come a long way since when we started as a Sabbath fellowship. The theory was, under the one law banner, one law for Jew and Gentile, that everyone is obligated to keep the Sabbath. If you're not keeping the Sabbath, you know, it's a sin for everyone. Jew and Gentile, no difference, makes no difference. And so clearly we needed to do something, so we started a Sabbath fellowship where we could come together, keep the Sabbath. And that's how we formed. Well, we're not exactly in that spot anymore. We're not exactly looking at it that way, so need to get some things straight here. The Sabbath is, a lot of people, you know, when you're talking Sabbath with people outside of Beth Emanuel, outside of Messianic Judaism, if you're in the rest of the church, they'll be worried about legalism. They'll be like, well, you know, I don't know, that sounds like legalism. But, you know, Sabbath is not legalism, because here's why. Observing the Sabbath does not earn salvation. You know, it just doesn't. Nowhere does it say, keep the Sabbath and you will earn eternal life. But instead, what is the reward for keeping the Sabbath? The rabbis say the reward for keeping the Sabbath is the Sabbath. You get to keep the Sabbath. So I'll lay down my cards in that regard right away. The Sabbath is, there's a difference between Jews and Gentile Christians when it comes to the Sabbath commandment. The obligation is not the same. So if you're a Gentile, I'm going to try to encourage you to keep the Sabbath, and I'm always doing that. I'm trying to encourage, show you the goodness and the beauty and the blessing and the holiness of God's holy day, and to be able to come to this party, which is Shabbat. Week after week, I'm going to try to sell you on that idea to take hold of the Sabbath, right? And if you're a Jewish believer, I'm going to try to convince you that the biblical Sabbath belongs to you. It's yours. And because it's yours, it's something you should be proud of and take seriously. All right, so that's my approach here in terms of the difference. The Sabbath for us is not just a day off. It is a foretaste of the Messianic era and the world to come. We know that God created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, so it says in Genesis, and on the seventh day he rested. And some of the early rabbis that we read in the Talmud saw that as a pattern, an eschatological pattern for end time stuff, you know, laying out the end times on the basis of the psalm that says, a day is as 1,000 years with the Lord. And they said, you see, the Sabbath comes at the end, at the culmination. It comes at the end. It represents a 1,000-year era of peace. And this is where the whole concept of the kingdom comes from. This whole messianic concept that we're always talking about, the kingdom of heaven, is predicated on this belief in the Sabbath, the practice of the Sabbath. And so this is why we say in regard to, you know, the poetic words of the rabbis in regard to the Sabbath, say that the kingdom, the days of Messiah and the world to come will be the day, they call it one day, the day that is altogether Sabbath. That's the idea. So we say, a foretaste of the world to come. And the apostles had the same view of redemptive history. I can show it to you in a couple places, in the church fathers and so on. But just like right in the New Testament, Peter alludes to it, hints to it, when he says, with the Lord, one day is as 1,000 years. And 1,000 years is as one day. The writer of the book of Hebrews talks about the kingdom, entering the kingdom. He says there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. And he says this in regard to the kingdom. And in the book of Revelation, the kingdom is 1,000 years. You know, it's not coincidence. These things are all connected together, and they're all Shabbat-based, Sabbath-based. It's a weekly foretaste of the era of peace and rest. In fact, in Se'ena Yerena, the old Yiddish collection of Midrash that women throughout the shtetls of Eastern Europe used to read, it just, you know, everything gets distilled down very beautifully and simply. I love Se'ena Yerena. And it says, we rest on Shabbat to symbolize the peace that we will have in the days of the Messiah. Very succinctly put. Very well put. The saintly Dwight Pryor, peace be upon him, wrote about it this way. He said, Shabbat is the end of creation, both as its completion and as its goal. The world is created good, but only God in partnership with man can make it holy. Shabbat hallows the creation. He's talking about how God made the heavens and the earth, and throughout the whole process of making in the heavens and the earth, he never said anything was holy until he came to the seventh day and he sanctified it and called it holy. He says, on the Sabbath, man and his maker dwell in unity in a special way, and mutually they create Shabbat Kodesh, a Sabbath of holiness. What does this mean? What's Dwight Pryor talking about? He's saying, well, look, on the one hand, the Bible says God sanctified the seventh day. He made it holy. But on the other hand, the commandment says, sanctify the seventh day and make it holy. Now, did God make it holy or does man make it holy? And he says, see, there's a partnership between man and God around the Sabbath day to make it holy, to bring about this holiness. He writes along these lines, he continues, he says, the union of intimate covenantal partnership is the goal and passion of the Holy One who created man. Every Sabbath kept, every seventh day hallowed, sanctified, points to the eventual destiny of the creation itself. The finite will become the dwelling of the infinite. And in that day, the whole earth shall experience perpetual Shabbat Shalom. This is some beautiful stuff. When God rested, he took Shabbat. What does Shabbat mean? You know Shabbat is a verb? Yes, Shabbat is a verb, and it means to cease. Usually we think of a verb as an action, but then it is an action. Ceasing is also an action. And this is something, like I said, this is an asset. This is something we have to offer to the world. Today's world is extremely, extremely busy. Electronic communication had this process of speeding things up. You know the way email works? It used to be, I was talking with my brother one time about this. He's my brother Terrence works in he's high up in administration of this company. And he says, before email, if you had an idea, there was a process that you would have to run through. You'd have to actually write this out and perhaps mail it to someone or make a phone call. But now, any inane idea that pops into your mind can instantly shot over to some, and so it's this constant flurry of communication. Anyway, I don't know. That's just an example. Email, you shouldn't be checking email on the Sabbath. I guess that's my point. No, that wasn't it. The point is that today's world is very busy, and men and women today believe they don't have time to stop. The world will quit spinning. I don't have time to stop. This week I was reading about life in the Mediterranean, because Paul would rent this lecture hall of Tyrannus in Ephesus, and he would get it at about 11 a.m., and he'd have this rented from 11 to 4 a.m. And the commentary I was reading is saying, oh yeah, that makes total sense, because in the Mediterranean world, everyone was done with work by 11 a.m. is they'd get up at 6, and they would work till about 11, and then they would have lunch, and then they'd take a siesta, and then they kind of lounge around, and, you know, and then at night you go to parties. And that's how I was like, wow, we work too much. That sounds great. But Sabbath is this, you know, that's, I think people should be jealous. People should be jealous. He's like, what? You get a day off like that once every week? You know, where you're not running to the next thing. You're not running around, busy with the next thing. The commandment of the Sabbath forces the Sabbath keeper to stop for one day and remember who created time in the first place. Who set this in motion? On the Sabbath, we remember that we serve God and not our schedule. Dwight Pryor writes this way about it. He says, Shabbat encourages us to honor the Creator by giving up our creations. For 6 days a week, we labor for our own ends. For one day, we are asked to remember the Creator and return our creations and ourselves back to His dominion. Out of all the things that God created, like I mentioned, the Sabbath was the first thing that He set aside as holy. And the Sabbath is also the first thing that you have an intersection of holiness and blessing. So whereas He had blessed the creatures, be fruitful and multiply, it's only in regard to the Sabbath that it says He blessed it and made it holy. And so the Sabbath stands from the beginning of time as the first institution of blessing and holiness. In other words, the first institution of godliness. And this is before there was ever a temple or an altar or a synagogue or a church, before there was a Bible, before God had given a single commandment, before David wrote a single psalm or any man prayed a single prayer, there was the Sabbath. And the rabbis say that the Sabbath, even though it was the last thing made out of the whole 7 days of creation, it was the first thing God had thought of, the first thing in His mind when He set out to create. So there's a parable that illustrates this idea. It can be compared to a king who made a bridal chamber, which he plastered, painted, and decorated. What did the bridal chamber then lack? Only a bride to enter it. Similarly, what did the world lack after 6 days of creation? Everything was already made. Only the Sabbath. Last in deed, first in thought. It is such a different way of looking at Shabbat. You know, when sometimes I think, you know, Christianity thinks of the Sabbath as part of the bondage of the law. Therefore, you know, something difficult, something unpleasant, a difficult yoke. But in Messianic Judaism, the Sabbath is our delight. It's our joy. It's our treasure. It's our prized possession. I like to think of it as the oldest heirloom of the family of God. And like I said, most Christians, you know, believe that keeping the Ten Commandments is a good thing to do. I mean, it's like you're not going to get a lot of argument there. On the Ten, you know, it's like, well, I don't know about the Ten Commandments. So we have this natural, you know, this is a natural path of communication, the Ten Commandments, the Sabbath. And depending on who's doing the counting now, you know, you have to know who you're talking to. You're talking to somebody from Judaism or Eastern Christianity, the Sabbath is commandment number 4, right? But if you're talking to someone from Western Christianity, it's number 3. It's just a different numbering scheme, all right? So, but depending on which, so we're going to look at this commandment now, 4 or 3, just for fun. Exodus chapter 20 is where we're reading. You've heard it a bazillion times, but I'll read it again to you. Chapter 20, verse 8. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work. You, your son, your daughter, your male servant, your female servant, your livestock, the sojourner within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, and he rested on the seventh. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. All right. Great. That is our commandment. Now, keeping that in mind, let's look at it as it recurs in Deuteronomy chapter 5. Verse 12. It says, observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. So first off, I'd like to point out that there's a discrepancy here. In Exodus, it said, remember the Sabbath day. Whereas here in Deuteronomy, it says, observe the Sabbath day. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath for the Lord your God. Good, it's the same day. On it you shall not do any work. You, your son, your daughter, that's the same. Your male or female servant, that's the same. Your ox, your donkey, any livestock, sojourner who is within your gates. That your male and female servant may rest as well as you. And you shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. You see, the difference, a big difference, is that back in Exodus it said, because in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, and on the seventh day he rested. Whereas here in Deuteronomy it says, because you were a slave in Egypt and the Lord your God brought you out of there. And so on the one hand it tells us, in Exodus it says, remember the Sabbath. Why? Because God made the heavens and the earth in 6 days and he rested on the seventh. But in Deuteronomy it says, keep the Sabbath, observe the Sabbath. Why? Because you were slaves in Egypt, and God took you out of there with an outstretched arm. Now, to be sure, the difference between these two words, observe and remember, you know, in a single utterance, the Holy One made us heard. How'd that rhyme? I go, I don't know, word heard. A single word. The explanation is that, God must have said both simultaneously. Just sounded something like that. It's like, observe, remember, something like that. God said both words simultaneously, so both are true. Exodus is true and Deuteronomy is true because he said both words at the exact same moment. And there's actually some truth to this in that the Semitic concept of remember has clear connotations of observance. Like God says we are to remember to keep his covenant. To remember his covenant means keep his covenant, right? Or when God remembered Noah in the ark, it means that he did something for him. And he remembered Sarah. He did something. So to remember has this meaning of to do, to act upon. So it's not really a difference. It's not really a difference. But there is definitely a difference between because in 6 days God made the heavens and the earth and rested on the seventh, and between because God took you out of Egypt. That's a big difference. All right. So what does it mean to remember? Do you remember when I told you about how Shammai remembered the Sabbath? I like Shammai's theory of remembering the Sabbath. This is, Hillel and Shammai, that Shammai. Okay, so this is how Shammai, he lived in the days just before the master was born, I suppose. Maybe they overlapped a little bit, give you a sense of time. This is how Shammai would remember the Sabbath. He'd go to the market, and he'd go to the market, and he's in the market, and he'd see a very nice, something really exceptionally fine, and he'd say, that is Sabbath worthy. And just whatever day it was, he was always thinking ahead to the Sabbath. This is how we remember the Sabbath. So it's like, that is a nice, chicken or fish or bottle of wine. And he said, that is Sabbath worthy. And he would buy it and set it aside for Sabbath. That's how he would remember all week long, just preparing for Sabbath all week. But the legend on Shammai is then that if he was in the market and he saw something even more Sabbath worthy, then he would buy that and go home and eat the other thing that he had already bought. Well, anyway, that might be one way to remember the Sabbath. I like that theory. But going back to Dwight Pryor's words on the Sabbath, he takes these two, this remember the Sabbath in Exodus and this observe the Sabbath or keep the Sabbath in Deuteronomy, and makes a distinction. He says, obviously both aspects are relevant to Israel, the Jewish people. But perhaps, at another level, we see here a basis for humankind, meaning all human beings, humanity, honoring the Sabbath as well. After all, long before the Mosaic covenant with Israel was struck at Sinai, God created Adam, humanity, in the garden and then ceased from his labors. Shabbat was a universal creation principle before it became a particular covenant precept. So the idea is that Dwight Pryor is bringing out here is that while God is commanding Israel to keep the Sabbath, why, on what basis? Well, you are Israel, the sign forever between you and me. I brought you out of Egypt. You're my people. So Israel is required to keep the Sabbath. All of humanity is given the remembrance of the Sabbath. Now, this is an artificial distinction, I believe. But nevertheless, as Dwight Pryor puts it, he says, perhaps at another level we see here. So in other words, not the literal surface meaning, but one step beyond the literal surface meaning, there's this, it's as if the Torah is hinting at a universal application of the Sabbath. And I think this is quite beautiful because it really illustrates the apostolic heart of, you know, of what's being communicated in Acts 15 and so on. It's like, yes, of course the Jewish people are obligated to keep the Sabbath and to not work on the Sabbath, where work doesn't mean not go to your job, it means that, but work also means, you know, not to not to do any of the 39 forms of work, malachot. Of course, the apostles never are questioning this. There's no question about this. The question is, are Gentiles also, the God-fearing Gentile believers, also obligated along these same lines? And the answer is no, we're not going to obligate them along the same lines, but we remember. The Gentiles remember the Sabbath. And what does it mean to remember the Sabbath? Well, you know what? There's a lot more room in remember than observe, isn't there? And so I always, you know, sometimes I've told you this before, I meet Christians who want to keep the Sabbath. They have a heart for the Sabbath. But they're distressed because their current circumstance, they can't. You know, and they wonder, what should they do? You know, it's like, should I quit my job or, you know, leave my spouse? I know someone who did that. My husband won't keep the Sabbath. We're divorced. I was like, ooh, there's righteousness for you. That's really got your priorities straight. So what should I do, you know, in this situation, you know? And this isn't uncommon. This isn't uncommon for it was, you know what? It wasn't uncommon in the days of the apostles either. Think of how many times the apostles address believers in the epistles who are slaves. And slaves, obey your masters. Do you think that their masters are like, oh, hey, I realize tonight's Friday and you're going to need the next 24 hours off? Not. So, this, you know, what's the slave supposed to do in regard to the Sabbath? Sometimes it's not possible. Sometimes, and especially for Gentiles in such a situation. And when I encounter situations like this, I remind people, I would say, you know, God commands us to also to remember the Sabbath. And He commands us to remember and observe the Sabbath. Sometimes you can't do both, but you can always remember. It's possible to at least remember. Not everyone can be a Sabbatarian. If you're not able to observe the Sabbath, you can remember it. What does that mean? Well, you know, it means, you know, keeping as much as you can, keeping as much as you're able, honoring it, celebrating it, setting it aside, sanctifying it as much as possible, that this is God's holy day, doing what you can. I like to remember, I like to suggest to people, maybe start with Friday night. You know, that's a start. Where does the Sabbath begin? Friday night. Okay, then start there. Start with a nice meal on Friday night. Maybe a candlelight dinner Friday nights. You know, that's a first step, and it's filling that heart of the mitzvah of remembering the Sabbath. And I like to encourage people, you know, that Torah is never all or nothing. It has never been that. It's never all or nothing. It's always something is better than nothing. And something more is better than nothing. So here's the heart of what I'm saying to you today. I think we have something substantive to say to the age-old question that has racked our faith regarding the Sabbath. I think we have a positive quality, biblical answer to give to people. And that is that there is a distinction between Jewish Sabbath obligations, where the Jewish person is commanded to observe the Sabbath, and Gentile obligation, where a Gentile can, at a minimum, remember the Sabbath and celebrate the Sabbath and set the Sabbath apart as a holy day, even if he's unable to take on the full prohibitions which are incumbent on the Jewish people. In his article, Shabbat, Last in Creation, First in Intent, Dwight Pryor wrote about, he wrote to his Christian readers about the blessing of doing this, of keeping Sabbath like this. And he wrote, "Shabbat reminds us of the goodness of the creation and the greatness of the Creator. Nature is not worshipped in the biblical worldview, but neither should it be ignored nor denigrated. Setting apart the seventh day to the Lord honors our Creator." That's a universal thing. I mean, everybody has a Creator. And like I always point out, the early believers, I mean, it didn't matter. You know, if you were a Gentile, you were one of the early believers with the apostles. Look, there wasn't another day of worship. There was no other day of worship. There's this beautiful piece of apostolic liturgy. You know how I've always told you about how, like, I feel a little queasy when, in the Kiddush when it says, "Who has sanctified us from the nations?" And Friday nights, I'd read this. These blessings from the Siddur. And I've always felt a little like awkward about that, because, like, well, I know what this means. It set us apart from the nations. And I just happen to be one of those nations. You know? It's just reinterpreted in my head, you know? I can reinterpret it in my head and say, "Sanctified us from the nations" means he took each of us out of all the nations and brought us to the body of Messiah. That's a beautiful interpretation. But that's not what the Siddur had in mind. You know, that is not what the prayer originally had in mind. But so we were working on this problem at First Fruits of Zion as we're looking at Sabbath blessings. As this one particular problem. And we came up with an optional text for this based on a Christian prayer from a set of Christian prayers from probably the 3rd century called that are enclosed contained in apostolic constitutions. It's a 3rd century Christian document, all right? And there's a prayer for the Sabbath day, because, you know, the early believers were Sabbatarian. And many of the prayers that are in the Didache also end up in this early liturgy. And so we took a chunk out of that, and Aaron did this amazing thing where he, like, got the Greek. It was Greek, right? Not Latin. It was, I think it was apostolic constitutions. I think it's Greek. So you did this amazing thing. You got the Greek, and you laid out the Greek, like the whole of this prayer. And then you found like the Hebrew equivalents, you know, what's, so as if on the assumption that probably this was Hebrew before it was Greek, maybe, you know, and kind of working it backwards. And then he translated it into Hebrew, reverse engineering, translated it into Hebrew, and then translated it from the Hebrew to English. It's kind of a backwards way of doing things, I suppose. But it came out really beautiful. So I'll just read to you this alternate Kiddush. Listen to this. This is a real Christian prayer. O Lord of legions, you created the world by your word, and you separated a Sabbath as a memorial. For on it you ceased from your work in order to meditate on the words of your Torah. You also appointed festivals for gladness of our souls, so that we may enter the remembrance of the wisdom that you created. For the Sabbath is a rest from creation, a completion of the world, a seeking of words of Torah, praise to God, to thank him for what he has given to mankind. It's a beautiful prayer, and it demonstrates that the early believers did not just regard the Sabbath as a day off. They considered it a day unto the Lord, a day that God had set aside for us to meditate on the words of his Torah. That's the main objective there, is like, what to do? Well, you know, the rest of the week we're working. We don't have time to sit around and talk about Torah all day and to study Torah and read God's Torah. Since ancient times, though, that's been the way that the Jewish people have come around the Sabbath, is to come around the Torah. And how do you do that? Well, I mean, it's got a lot of ceremony and drapings around it now, but we take the Torah out and we parade it around and we open it up and we read it aloud with the beautiful ancient cantillation of the Hebrew and so on. And then we talk about what we read for the rest of the day. You know, there's this link here, and this is something that was remembered by the believers. And it was the custom of our master as well. As it says in the Gospels, as was his custom, he went into the synagogue on the Sabbath. He stood up to read the Torah. So in our passage today, in the Torah, in the portion that we're studying for this particular Sabbath, it says, you, your son, your daughter. All right, talking to Jews, you, Jew, your son, also a Jew, and your daughter, also a Jew. Your male or your female servant, probably not a Jew. Your cattle, not Jews. Or your sojourner, your alien, your stranger, definitely not a Jew, who stays with you. And in the Deuteronomy version, we read, so that your servants may rest with you. Now, here's the thing about this commandment. This is a commandment for the Jew. All right, this is a commandment for the Jewish person who's reading this. He says, yes, I have some slaves. Okay, I guess I can't make my slaves work for me on the Sabbath. It's not a commandment to the slaves. It's a commandment to the Jewish person who has the slaves. Understand? However, it's also a commandment incumbent upon our master. Just as he is obligated to the whole of the Torah, he's also obligated to this particular commandment that he has to give his slaves the Sabbath rest. As it says in Deuteronomy, that they may rest with you. And so on the Sabbath, we rest with our master. And if you're a Gentile Christian, a Gentile believer, a God-fearer, purchased by Yeshua, redeemed by Yeshua, you are also called a servant of Yeshua. If you're his disciple, it says in the Gospels, a disciple is not above his teacher. It is sufficient for a servant to be like his master. So the two, you know, the relationship is the same. It's an equation. So In that regard, the Bible says that servants and slaves of a Jewish master are to be given the Sabbath along with their master. And in my opinion, this is the best reason of all for a Gentile Christian to keep the Sabbath. Not obligated as a Jew, but he should consider himself as the servant of a Jew. It reflects on our master. He is a Jew, king of the Jews, and we are his servants.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.